Welcome to another episode of Fresh from the Hill, Inside Stories of Noteworthy Cornellians. My name is Lou Diamond, CEO of Thrive, host of Thrive Loud, class of 92, proud supporter of the Big Red, and your host of today's episode. Today on Fresh from the Hill, we are featuring Eden Brashote. Eden, how are you today?
I'm good, Lou. Thanks for having me.
I'm going to share with the listeners a little bit about Eden right now. Eden graduated class of 2015, so that was not that long ago. Looks like she could still be there on campus. She is a design strategist at HLW, an international design and architecture firm headquartered in New York. She is passionate about how space makes people feel and how to create spaces that work better for people. From a mikveh in Ithaca all the way to a girls' academy in Ghana with NGO voices of African mothers, Eden has used these skills to give back to her communities. Today, Eden helps companies demystify their real estate challenges, articulate functional and cultural goals for the workplace, and translate these into design principles that can improve their space and workflow. That's very cool. That's one of the better bios I've ever read.
Well, thank you.
So, has this been a passion of yours always?
Design.
Yes.
Design has always been a passion of mine. I actually have recently found in my bedroom old sketches of furniture that I wanted to design when I was old enough that I got to choose what my room should look like.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was for a long time, I didn't know that it was a career. And I come from a home of creative people and very handy people. My dad would fix anything that broke. And so when I started to be interested in design, my family at first said, are you sure? I think that's more of a hobby, not a career. And I said, no, I think I'm going to look into this. I think there's something here. And as it says in the bio a little bit, I'm always interested in how space makes people feel. Okay. What is it about a library that when you walk in, you know to be quiet? What is it about certain spaces that feel cozy? What does cozy look like? Mm. Well, you know, you have an experience, but if you think about what you saw or what you heard or, you know, what people were doing around you that made you feel this way, that was what I was interested in. And it turned out that when I researched exactly that, Cornell DEA came up, Design Environmental Analysis, and that's exactly how they focus on how they teach space.
I now want to understand a little bit about how you think about space. I walk into a room and maybe I'll be a little tactical. We're in a room right now. We're actually in the Cornell Club in New York City. There's a table. There's you know, chairs. It looks like it could be a conference room or a meeting room, and it's just set to what it is. Nothing so amazing or special about it.
Sure.
When you look at a room, what does it say or speak to you?
Well, in this room specifically, I would look at the era that it speaks to. There is clearly a tradition and a heritage that they are trying to evoke. More than that, there's some flexibility going on in this room. There's a screen that can drop down if you need it for a conference. There are tables that are clearly moved around to provide food and beverages, so you know that the room is used for various purposes. So even though it might be a simple kind of four walls and a big table in the middle, even in this room alone, we've set up a photo backdrop, food service, a podcast setup. So space, as much as it can be simple, it can still have multiple purposes. And you can design with that in mind without sacrificing things like tradition and heritage and the look and feel. The function is actually quite different from the look and feel. And those two things need to come together for whatever you're trying to accomplish in that space.
I'm going to ask a question that I don't know if you're going to know the answer to, but I want to hear how you react to it.
Okay.
When you look at a situation where you're looking to help somebody come up with a design for them, if that's what you're doing today,
sure.
And I'll ask more questions about that.
Sure.
Is your reaction to try to fit the design to what the needs of the person who's occupying that space is, or maybe influence a little bit more of your expertise and what could be the best use of the space that you think should be applied to that particular space?
That's a very perceptive question, Lou. And I think it really depends on the situation. And not to kind of throw that out, it depends. But when you're dealing with people and their personal needs, it's completely about understanding their needs. That's what I'm trying to take in. a lot of the time, they might not even know their needs, or they might not know them well enough to articulate them. So it's about asking the right questions and really drawing it out of them. And that can be done in a number of ways. It can be done asking some questions point blank. It could be done looking at shared resources, looking at photos, getting them to react. People react to photos, whether they consider themselves to be creative or not. In my experience, it doesn't matter what kind of person you are, or what kind of person you think you are, you'll always react. And it's my job to take those reactions and understand them, categorize them, formulate them, and drive those reactions together, find trends in them that sort of tell me what your needs are if you can't tell me what they are. And when it comes to expertise, which was the second half of your question, so it's really about learning their needs. Expertise comes in handy for the most part around workplace. The reason that most clients seek out workplace strategists and kind of experts in that niche, in that part of the field, is for their expertise. It is to know what their peers and what their competitors are doing. So they might say, here's what we need, or here's what we think we need, here's what we want. Our priorities might be around attraction and retention, attracting talent. They might be financially driven, or culturally driven. You know, a client might have a very strong brand, but then they might turn it to us and say, well, here's what we'd like ideally, but what do you think about that? And there's room kind of for the back and forth, but it depends on the client's appetite. And at the end of the day, we are driving the function. We are trying to make a place that helps them function better or with ease. So hearing from them first is priority.
Which do you like better? The question asking process, which is really the inquiry and trying to understand what the needs are of your clients, or the execution of what you heard and then coming up with the design?
That's also a great question.
I only ask good questions.
This is going to be a tricky 25 minutes. No, but it's really both of them. And I think my favorite part of the process is kind of not to say all of the above, but my favorite part of the process is their reaction to the solution. It's making their lives easier, right? And sometimes that's a quick process. I've dealt with clients where in a month we fixed their space. They were looking for quick solutions. We heard them. We turned it around. We gave them suggestions. They implemented them. Some solutions you can find on Amazon. So there were, you know, it was a quick fix. And for people to walk into their space and say, wow, I can, you know, this is so much better. I can work better. I can concentrate better. I can collaborate better. It's that satisfaction that, or kind of making their world better for them, is what drives me and my work. So it's the two together, right? Then it's figuring out what they need, giving them what they need, and seeing that end result. And sometimes it doesn't always work out. Sometimes we don't get it right and we have to go back and we do what's called a post-occupancy evaluation and find out what exactly didn't go right, what's low-hanging fruit that we can solve right away, what do we need to spend a little more time analyzing, and that's the process. That's what it's about, yeah.
So let's talk about the workforce today and workplaces today. Yeah. And I am a consultant as well, so I am in a lot of different work environments, and I have seen everything.
Sure.
I've seen old traditional stuffy from cubicles that break rooms out to the shared office space and, you know, moving chairs and desks and rooms and walls to the point that it's very amorphous in that sense.
Very amorphous.
And to your point, culture and the clients and what they need are obviously going to dictate a lot of what that looks like. But we also have multi-generational workforces out there that have different needs, likes, wants, and desires.
Absolutely.
Okay. This is a challenging environment for someone like yourself. And now I've just backed into why someone like you is needed in this world. How do you bridge the generations in a workspace so that the workspace has the flow that works ideally for that company, but also for the people as well?
Sure. That's a great question. I'm actually curious what you think about those kind of amorphous, as you said, workspaces. But
I'll opine.
Yeah?
But I'll let you go first.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, a lot of when it comes to function in the workplace, and the workplace is where we spend most of our time today, right? a lot of our needs turn out to be not generational, but rather human. Some of the latest trends that have been actually driving the workplace for a while now, things like a sense of purpose. I mean, who doesn't want to feel a sense of purpose when they get up in the morning, right? That's not a, I mean, millennials are notorious for wanting that, but everyone else seems to benefit just the same. And similarly, when an open workplace is done well, the focus is not on just taking down barriers. Some of it is, right? Taking down those cubicle walls. The focus is on supplementing with what we call activity-driven spaces. So if we're going to take away your cubicle, what are we giving you? And there's so much more that we give back than that we take away. And that can be everything from the right mix of meeting spaces, so you can have a cozy two-person meeting that's VC-enabled, so you can talk to someone remotely. So many companies today are international. You can have the right room to have a 12-person meeting and not feel crowded. You can have the right, like a little phone booth that is completely soundproof, so you can go in there and talk about whatever private things you need, and no one can hear you. In fact, we have one in our office, and just for fun, sometimes we go in and scream, but somebody's standing outside just testing how loud we can get before someone can hear you. And so when you, and these activities that I describe, right, that those also, people take part in them regardless of their title at work and regardless of their age. Everyone needs to make a phone call. Everyone needs to have a meeting. Everyone needs to have lunch somewhere, and needs to have privacy at their desk and focus. And then sometimes they need to collaborate too, and they might take some inspiration from seeing how other people work. So all these trends and behaviors tend to cross the generational gap. So while it seems like this is a new trend and kind of the young people are asking for it, in our experience, most people adapt really well. And if we do our work well and we gather the data in advance, we can balance the spaces that we provide based on the demographic at the office and based on the activities they said they'd partake in. So we end up kind of serving, does that make sense? It ends up being a flexible solution based on what the company needs.
I think, and this will answer part of your question back to me, which was, sure, you know, what's my thought of the amorphous workspace or whatever it might be. I think you need different spaces within a space. Meaning, sure, you need your, to your point, you need your places to eat, you need your places to work, you need your places to be quiet. And a lot of those very open air, a lot of these places here in New York City and other major metropolitan areas where there are multiple companies working together, doing your main work where people can be coding or programming and doing stuff that are alone, it doesn't matter where you are, whether you're even home or in that place.
Sure.
But you always need that place to get away to talk about confidential matters, team development issues, sales calls, business meetings, places where you need to get away from those masses.
Right.
A lot of those amorphous offices that aren't big enough to have other sections, I've seen, can be a little problematic, just because people are trying to find a well-defined place.
Right.
And not as many people can work in an unstructured office location, and they need those well-defined rooms and barriers. We grew up in a house with rooms. We went to buildings and classes at school that were clear-cut as to what they are.
Right, with a door.
Yeah, with a door.
With a door that you close.
So there's certain familiarities and things on how we need to work. And yes, by the way, I have clients and colleagues who can go to the mountains in Colorado, and that's how they think and do their best work.
Sure.
And that's why, you know, I've seen places where they literally have an outdoor place or a garden.
Absolutely.
Up in Vermont or somewhere in New England, I forgot which major, if it was LL Bean's not in Vermont, wherever, some company up in the Northeast literally has fields that people can go out, and that's where they'll go out and have their meetings because that's what they do.
They take inspiration from those.
From all those points. Yeah. So I think great designers have the ability to understand all those needs and try to figure out not only what fits best for the workspace, but what space works best and fits. So I'm with you.
Absolutely. Yeah. And to your point earlier about at which point do we make a recommendation kind of a little bit more firmly and say, you really should do this. A lot of the amorphous spaces that you see that don't have that divisible space, everyone knows they need it. But it usually comes down to budget and fitting a certain headcount. And it's a problem that we come up against or a challenge, I should say, very often. And that would be an example of where we say we really recommend putting in a few of these meeting rooms, even though in their place you could put maybe 12 more people, but you can look at people sharing desks maybe and then make sure that you have this differentiated space for people to work effectively when they are here.
And I'm sure you've seen this trend, and you're probably more ahead of this than most people, where there were these more common areas, we'll call it 5 to 10 years ago, and that's what they were building towards now. We seem to be becoming a little bit more structured now today in workspaces because they realize that that might not have worked for all purposes.
That's right, and that's exactly right. And also, the list of activities we provide for continues to grow.
Right.
Right, from nap rooms to nap pods to various types of secluded environments that are still meant for you to focus on your laptop, but they look completely different because some people focus in a cafe environment and some people might focus in a lounge chair. Others might fall asleep in a lounge chair and they want like a hard desk, but it might be a desk that's in a different part of the building to get away from your team sometimes, and that's how you focus best. No one's tapping your shoulder. So that list of kind of itemized, specialized spaces continues to grow.
Yeah. And I'll even throw in, just because for my familiarity, it's ergonomics as well. I have a standing desk that goes into a sitting desk. So now you have to accommodate all those needs too, I'm sure.
Sure. They're becoming the new standard, really, yeah. As is sustainability, actually. We're seeing the baseline for what's acceptable change and rise, which is nice. There's a lot more of an awareness of your comfort level. That's what ergonomics is about. And your energy, to our point earlier, is that you come back from lunch and you're ready to fall asleep. But if you stand up instead, you give yourself that boost you need to make another 3 hours be productive.
Yep.
Yeah.
So let's go back to the hill for a little bit, because you're not too far from there. And this is something that at least I've seen, having been there recently. Yeah. Depending on the building you're in within Cornell University, there's many different looks and feels of designs that are out there. So you, not only as a student, got to learn and study that when you were there, but you also got to witness what is probably 50 to 60 years of different office, of different classroom look and feels, or
Absolutely.
Study rooms. Share with the listeners some of the things, I guess, that maybe you saw changes while you were there, or things that connected with you marrying old and new.
Sure. That's also a very perceptive question. I want to take this opportunity to give a shout out to Christy Mahoney, who is the Director of Facilities for Human Ecology. And the reason I think this is a perfect opportunity to bring that up is that as a student of human ecology, a design student, whenever there were Martha Van Rensselaer Hall, MVR Hall, was constantly undergoing change. And this is one of the older colleges on campus, so they did have rooms that were much older. Because the building is so heavily utilized, they couldn't just vacate and renovate, right? They had to renovate in pieces.
Right.
And so then you really did have that old and new right next to each other, on the same floor sometimes. Just one part of the hallway was renovated and the other wasn't. But the great thing that they did, I think they did so well, was turn to the students when they wanted kind of advice or fresh ideas. And I don't just say that because I was a student. The spaces that resulted were so unique. There are, I don't know when the last time was that you went back, but there's the commons that connects between HEB, the new building, and MVR, and that space is 116 feet long. Oh. And it's, I believe it's about 3 stories high, but one void without kind of any mezzanines inside. So at first they had this great opportunity to connect the buildings indoors, which we know is very important in Ithaca, snowy Ithaca. And then they said, well, we had an opportunity to connect the buildings, but what an awkward space we have. And so it was a huge learning opportunity for students, who also brought kind of fresh and uninhibited ideas that were not constrained or jaded from practice, from being practical, actually, in the built environment. And so they gave it to a studio, and a studio is all about learning, and they were able to experiment with what happens visually if the ceiling is painted black. Does it disappear from view? And how do you bring down some kind of covering onto the space so that it's not open and cold, right? So like this huge void that you walk into. And they came up with these clouds of rings that were made from recycled plastic, and those rings, actually, their real use is to stop oil spills in the ocean. What they drop the rings in, and because the oil is sort of thick, it just can't go through. But here it is, this beautiful kind of cloud-like light fixture, and it was just the right thing to bring down the ceiling without physically, you know, bringing it down.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah, and in the space, they broke it up, again, different uses. So there's high-top tables where you can come with your laptop, and then there's a living room, I'm saying with air quotes, in the middle where there are sofas and it's a lot more loungy. And then those kind of secluded areas that we were just talking about a moment ago, they had a couple of nooks and crannies left over where they put a chair that faced out the window and had that perfect opportunity to kind of relax and be alone. So it's just, it's amazing kind of what happens when you turn to that knowledge source that you have right there, that, you know, and create better space that way.
So now I'm going to have fun with you here.
Okay.
Ready, Eden? So you obviously have an eye and know how to help other clients with what can make their design ideal for them and understand how to draw that out of you. And we have lots of listeners on Fresh from the Hill that have an understanding of, how do I say this, simply, you know, they run their own companies and they have their own instances where they're listening now and thinking, gee, what kind of design do I have in my place? Well,
sure.
Let's say you are now running your own company and you have your own design company.
Okay.
And someone like you were to come in and now ask the questions of you, of what you would want the design to be of your place of work. Not going through all the details of what that would be, but what would be some of the key priorities that you would want as it related to the workplace that you work in?
So the way that architects work is very collaborative. We all have different expertise, especially the team that I'm on. I'm very lucky to be on a team where each of us studied something different in college. We bring these different knowledge spheres together. And so collaboration is key. And that warm collaboration that makes it easy to just say, hey, Lou, do you know, have we ever done a study on this topic before, and without feeling like you're disturbing anyone? So that warm, collaborative environment would be key. Good coffee. you can't have a good workplace without a solid food and beverage program, which does not have to be robust, but it does need to be there. I think those would be the top priorities, is working together and good coffee and good technology, of course.
All right. I like that.
Yeah.
Back at Cornell, what was your favorite class, or maybe the class that resonated most with you today?
Absolutely. My favorite class, well, there were very many. My favorite class was Adaptive Reuse with Rhonda Gilmore. This was one where she identified a real site for us in Rochester that was landmarked. And landmarked buildings have a million rules regarding like their preservation. And she brought us there. And there were about 12 of us in the studio. We were each to come up with our own design concept for what the use would be of the building, if it had some retail at the bottom and what the above was. Most of us chose, I think, a hotel because of the structure of the building. But Rhonda would do this amazing thing where she looked at your floor plan and she would draw as she spoke, and she would sketch everything, like simple things like a circulation path where people are walking through the building, which would, you know, is basically just a line, to detailed furniture, and she might draw out a focus point and draw for you what that millwork detail, the wood construction of that would be, at the same time, all while she's walking you through your floor plan and the corrections she's making and why. And her explanations were along the lines of, you know, walking in and moving over a wall and saying, this wall needs to move over because this is a nook where the person walks in and they want to get a coffee before they do what they're about to do. And she's just telling this story as she goes through the floor plan that really brought together the initial reason that I ever wanted to come to DEA at Cornell, which was people and space. What is a person doing when they walk in and they see this sculpture? You know, how does it make them feel? Okay, and then they walk over and they want to check their coat. Is there a place for that? Did we provide for them there? And, you know, and where is coffee? And how far do they have to go? And what does that look like? And just really bringing together people with space.
I like that.
Yeah.
Eden, when you have an off day, and judging by your smile and the fact that you always seem to be upbeat in the time we've gotten to know each other, I can't imagine you ever do have an off day.
Oh, thank you.
But when you are not quite right and you need to get back on the right track,
yeah,
what practice do you seek or what person do you seek out to help you get back on the thriving track?
Absolutely. I love bringing it back to thrive. That's I love that. Well, so there are two things. If I'm in the workplace, I've got to bring it back to that collaboration. Like I said, I'm very lucky to be surrounded by such a team of smart and driven people that if there's ever an off day or struggling with a client, you could turn to the person next to you, or I should say I turn to the person next to me, and they come over to my screen and they just solve it right there, and kind of co-creating that is immediately energizing. And if that doesn't work, I usually turn to my nephews. I've got five nephews and a niece. So I think you have a kids as well, and you know that kids are just, they're so bubbly.
My kids are about this big now, but they were bubbly.
a little bit bigger.
But they were. I remember the bubbliness.
Yes. Yeah. And, you know, once, as soon as they're in the room or even on FaceTime, they're so happy. It's so contagious. It makes all of your troubles seem small, right?
Oh, that's great. Eden, share with the listeners all the places people can find you, websites, URLs, social media, everything. We'll put it on the show notes, but it always sounds better when it comes
Absolutely.
From you.
So email is really easy. I'll always respond. My Cornell NetID is evb7@cornell.edu.
You're the seventh EVB in the entire, you know, alphabetical listing of that, I guess.
I guess so. V is kind of an odd letter, right?
Yeah.
Instagram, always Eden is the handle. And people can find me on LinkedIn as well.
Excellent. What are you looking forward to most as it relates to your career, projects or things that you want to do that you've maybe got a glimpse at, or are there challenges that you're excited to as it relates to design or some of your passions?
So I'm excited to hone in on certain areas of expertise more and watching them evolve. So one of the biggest topics we are hearing about now more and more in the workplace is equity. Mm-hmm. So there's like universal design, and there's kind of thinking of different user groups in your space. And then one level above that, way above that, is equity in the workplace and creating a space where every type of human can thrive. And one kind of, it would occur to someone to, if you wanted to do that, would be to ask those user groups, right? But when you do that, you're putting the onus on them to tell you about their difficulties or to tell you about any challenges they have. And that's not really very fair to ask them to do, right? Especially, it's kind of ironic. What you're trying to do is make everything more pleasant for everyone. So there are certain topics like this that are really starting to unfold in the workplace, and they're very specific, and I'd love to kind of see where that takes us and how much we can make space better for people, for all people.
Eden, this has been a total fun. Have you had fun?
This has been excellent. I've had so much fun.
Well, thank you for coming on the program today.
Thank you so much, Lou.
And to all our listeners out there, this is Lou Diamond, and go Big Red. Music from Fresh from the Hill was written, produced, and recorded by Kia Albertson Rogers. You can contact him at koa3@cornell.edu.